On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can you explain to the folks why it has been three albums from you in like 15 years?
It's hard to look at those statistics for me because I want to be prolific and I feel like I'm definitely moving into a period where there's like more ideas and more skill, I guess I've learned, you know. I think I take a long time to do things. I think I second guess myself probably too much. And there's definitely a thing about, you know, that first record was so successful. And then I felt with the C, I was given a lot of space because I had started to write that record. And then, you know, halfway through the record, my late husband died completely unexpectedly. And so in my world, that was sort of like, that was the end of my life. You know, I thought, well, this is the end of my life. And I thought, well, I've had a really good life, you know. I'm 29 and I've done all this stuff and the time just became really sort of elastic, I guess.
Corinne Bailey Rae is one of the great singers of the modern era. She was famous from her first album, but she hadn't done that many albums over the last 15 years. We talk about that. We talk about how the death of her first husband affected her. We talk about how she's right now working on a new album and what's going on with that. It's really interesting to talk with somebody who's really, really intelligent about music, about her music. For half of this conversation, you'll get that for free. For the whole thing, go to patreon.com/Touré Show. It's definitely worth it. All right, let's dig into it. It's Corinne Bailey Rae on Touré Show. What was the first time that you sang and you felt like, oh yeah, this is for me. I love this. I feel this in my bones of like, this is the best thing in the world.
I think it was when I was really young. I remember being doing this Christmas concert at school. And I remember the teacher going down the line. We had a bench and there was a few of us sat on the bench and she wanted us to sing this one part. She was looking for someone to sing it. So I must be like six or something. But I remember her going down and saying like, I just want you to sing this one line. It was from, I don't know, this Christmas song. And, you know, so she's like pointing to the person next to me and they had a go. And then she was like, and she pointed to the person. And I remember this excitement of thinking like, you know, ask me. I know I'll be able to do it. And she did ask me and I did sing. And then I was chosen to do that part in the play. So I liked the feeling of excitement and anticipation. Like, I think this is something I can do, but it hasn't been tested. And then it got like instantly tested by, this was like the head teacher of the whole school, you know? And I thought, I thought I could do that. And then I tried to do it and I did do it. And then, yeah, just I don't even remember the performance, but I remember that like audition moment and that feeling of having a wish come true. And I thought, yeah, I absolutely love that.
Do you remember her reaction to you singing? Like, was she like, oh, wow, that was really good?
I don't remember. I mean, she must have thought it was good enough to be like, she chose me. I don't know. Out of the 30 kids, it probably wasn't a very wide group. But yeah, I remember her instantly being like, you know, yes, you can do that part. And that's what I really loved, you know, just the wish coming true.
When did you start to think, I could do this for a job?
I guess I was in this indie band when I was a teenager. And everybody I knew was in a band because it was like grunge. So that was what you did. Like, you didn't play computer games or you didn't you know, there was no other activities. It was like everyone played guitar and everyone had a band. Everybody I knew who was in a band, who was in the vaguely sort of alternative world, which was everyone, because it was like, I don't know, 1997 or something. It's 1994, I guess, when I started that band, because I was 15. And I remember there was a few bands in our city that were kind of doing well. And then I remember going to watch a band, and they were just a few years older than us, but they weren't going to finish school because they'd been signed to a label. I remember thinking like, oh, you could do that. You could get signed. You could get paid. You could go on tour. You can make a record. That was as big as I had sort of dreamed it. You know, like they were touring in the UK and I was like, I'd love to tour in the UK and love to make a record. And so that's what I thought, oh, I'd love, you know. So then it was just like, we always worked on a band and we had no like holidays. We'd just always be really earnest, you know, writing and just trying to like enter every competition we could. Because it's really hard to get recording in those days, you know. So we won a bunch of things and I always thought that we'd, you know, make it with that band, but it wasn't to be. But the band was called Helen. So that was my dream, to be like fronting Helen and sort of hitting the big time of like the indie clubs of the UK. You know, that was as big as my ambition was, and I really loved being in that band.
So who were you listening to at that sort of development stage, who was sort of informing the singer you would become? Like who are your mothers and fathers almost as a singer?
Well, it's funny because at that time I would have said like the father, the person that was listening to the most at the time would be Kurt Cobain. So it's like that voice was a revolution to me. It's like, it's so sort of raw and so true. That MTV Unplugged, you know, my friend had taped it off the TV on a VHS. So it was like every day after school, we'd go around like, watch that. What's he doing? He sounds like he's just talking, or he sounds like his throat's going to break, but he's still sort of playing it. And he would just have that like cardigan on. And then we'd be looking at his fingers because, you know, there was no YouTube. It was like, rewind that part. What is he doing? And then just even getting into bar chords, like once you've learned to clamp onto that shape, it's that you can send it up and down the guitar. And so I loved Nirvana. I loved Bjork because that was this totally sort of unconventional voice. But also I loved her. I guess she had that like girl womanhood. So it wasn't, I guess so many people in say R&B at the time were really like, my whole thing is sexy and I'm, you know, and her thing was like really kind of girlish and, you know, very womanly and together, but not like sex is part of what I'm selling you as my music. So that really inspired me. And then, you know, hearing Billie Holiday as a teenager was another revelation as well, of just hearing someone who had a lot of texture in the voice. And I had always had this texture to my voice, which I had bemoaned as a child because it didn't fit in with any of the music we used to do at school, which was all, I guess, like West End musicals, you know, so you had to have this really clear, pure voice. And that's the real, you know, the desire for like the English voice. It's all traditional music. And I guess the music at our school was quite traditional and choral. And so I didn't really fit in with that. And I was in orchestra, I played the violin. But whenever they did musical stuff, it was always like these big grand voices, or it's always these really pure sort of choral things. So I never fit in with that. So yeah, Billie Holiday was like, oh, that's something I've never heard before. You know, just this gravelly sort of textured, like insistent, conversational. And then like hearing Kurt Cobain and then hearing Bjork with her more unusual pronunciations as well. So I was just like, oh, okay, it's open now. Singing is open to me, you know. And I'd grown up with R&B and funk and soul because that's what my parents were into. But I didn't see that as music that I could make, I guess mainly because I'd come out of this more punk DIY thing where it's like, well, we want to write our own songs. We're just learning the guitar from watching MTV Unplugged. So we're not going to be able to be like Stevie Wonder complex kind of jazz harmony. You know, we haven't had those music lessons. We just want to write like we want that thing of like, you've learned three chords, now write all the songs you can think of. So I have that.
Billie Holiday is not a surprise as a core inspiration, because you evoke that vibe for me and for a lot of people now, in terms of the depth of the sound, in terms of where the sound seems to come from inside of you. I mean, it definitely seems like she's listened to Billie Holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely love her, and I didn't discover her till I was a teenager. There was one of those adverts on TV. You might not have had them in America, but we had this thing where you could go to the post office, you know, and then you got like a binder and it was jazz great. So the first one was Billie Holiday, and that was the cheapest because it was the first one. And that was like, I don't know, $1.99. And, you know, my family, we didn't have that when we were growing up, the three of us, we didn't really have spare money, you know, because it's three girls. And so the fact that it was this singer and it was cheap and I could just go up the street and get it, I was just like, mom, I've just heard of this singer. And she's got, mom was like, I love Billie Holiday. And I have seen this film with Diana Ross where she's played by Billie Holiday. And I was like, well, we've never listened to Billie Holiday before, you know, and we didn't have any of her records. So that it was really revolutionary to me of like, you can sing, but you can bend up to notes. I had always had to do that because I have never been able to just land like, here's my, like right in the middle of the target intonation. And so it was, I loved hearing it. But my first response was like, how come I didn't hear this voice when I was 7 or 8 or 10 or 12, or when it would have made me feel a different way about my own singing? So it's instantly, it made me feel a different way about the sound I could make. Because up until then, I would be listening to like Emotions by Mariah Carey and thinking, why? You know, it's like, I want to sound like that, but I can't get that sound to come out. I've got this texture around my voice that I just can't get rid of. So yeah, so hearing Billie Holiday was a big thing for me.
It's funny to hear you say that you sort of envied Mariah. I mean, Mariah is like an extraordinary athlete, but you're a real singer, like a real singer. And there's a lot of things that you can do with your voice. I don't think of your voice as like, she's limited and she's getting by on like personality or, oh. like, you know.
Oh, well, that's good. I mean, I guess everyone feels like funny about their own instrument or whatever. And I feel like I've definitely come into it, and on my best days when it's like I've slept, I'm rested, I don't have a cold, I feel when I get to sing it feels to me like flying. It's like an out-of-body experience. It's like I'm in front of the audience, but I'm not really there. I'm just in my total element, you know. And then when the song finishes or the people clap, I am always kind of like sort of shaken out of it, because on a really good show, where I guess the audience is really with us and I feel like I can do what I love to do, then it does really click in. You know, I feel like I'm not a natural performer. Like I'm not the sort of person that goes to a party and it's like, right, everyone, I'm here, let the fun commence. You know, like I'm the center of attention. I'm going to regale you with stories. And I don't really feel like I'm that person. So I feel like I can't turn it on is what I'm trying to say. And I've been at plenty of things now, you know, especially TV shows where it's like, here's your 2 minutes and 30 seconds, you know, and you're just like, ah, exactly. I just get terrified. But when I've got that, it's an hour and a half, and I get to walk on stage and you hear that applause and then you think, right, we're here. And you kind of like, I don't know, take the energy from that moment. Then I really feel like something just happens, you know, when the music comes together. And, you know, we always play live. We don't use backing tracks. We don't use click tracks. So I always feel it's just anything could happen. And that kind of focuses me in a way that I can't get in any other context, you know, even the studio. So
do you feel like you're flying the whole time, or is it like, you know, like you get into
that moment,
big part of the song, and you're like, now I'm levitating.
Yeah. I feel like it's a moment. It might be like a few songs in. So I think the first few songs, like, right, is everything working? Can I hear myself? I see the photographers, right? I do my first track, and then like, I've got to pick up my guitar. Is it in tune? And it's kind of more organized. I'm like, yeah, we're just doing, were kind of laying the foundations or whatever. And, you know, what kind of room is it? Is there a bar at the back? Are people talking? Is there wings? Am I looking at the balcony? So it's like the first few songs, I feel like I'm taking it all in. And then there'll just be a moment where it switches. It might happen in like third song or the fourth song, or where it just goes into another thing where it's like, I feel like I'm there, but I'm not really there. And that is what I, that high can sustain me for a really long time, you know, really long time.
It sounds amazing. Do you love the sound of your voice?
I like the feeling of singing. That's what I guess I would say. Like, I don't like, you know, if I'm somewhere like a restaurant or a supermarket or someone else's house, you know, or like the one you'll do is like going to get your hair cut and they'll say, hey, let's listen to your music or something. Or like, let's put on Karim Bailey Ray Pandora or something. So it's like, you can relax and then something will pop up. It's my own song. And I, you know, because I'm a producer as well, it's like all the time I'm just taking it apart. I'm like, oh, we should have kept the drums going in that second verse, or oh, we should have, you know, it should be compressed more heavily so that it bounces out the speakers more, or why didn't I brighten the vocal here, or that could have been made more of. So yeah, I find, especially my own records, I find it hard to listen back to until, you know, several years later. But yeah, straight away, I don't like to listen to it because I like to be in it. I don't like to analyze it from the outside because I don't have that amount of technical skill, I guess, or perception, whatever.
Michelle Obama is one of the most inspiring, intelligent, graceful, unapologetically Black people that I could think of. Just her existing makes me happy, makes me feel inspired, makes me want to be a little bit more like her every day, because she seems to be just this extraordinary person. So if there's any sort of podcast about her, I want to listen to that. Life Kit from NPR has a whole episode on Michelle Obama. It's part of their whole Black Stories, Black Truths collection, where you'll hear stories of Black joy, Black resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today from a unique Black perspective. There's a Code Switch episode about Dr. King, and I love Code Switch. There's It's Been a Minute about Eric Andre, who I love. We are not the same person, even though a lot of people think we look alike, even though he lives in my neighborhood now. But stop telling him he looks like me. Stop telling me I look like him. There's a Pop Culture Happy Hour about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I loved that show. That show meant so much to me. This is what Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR is all about. Stories about Black America and Black culture. Whole Pop Culture Happy Hour on Abbott Elementary, which is another amazing modern Black show. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott to the Color Purple, the stories of Black Stories, Black Truths will take you inside the Black community and Black culture. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. Life doesn't happen in bi-weekly segments, so why should your paycheck? The money you earn every day can be in your hands today with Earn In. Earn In is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 a day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earn In app, verify your paycheck, and then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips automatically repaid from your next paycheck. So if you need to make a repair suddenly, to get a new dress or a new shirt or shoes, you can do that. You can get the money that you've already earned but haven't been paid. You can get that now with Earn In. Make Earn In a part of your financial routine and join their 3.5 million customers. who say things like, when I think about earn-in, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me peace of mind. It gives you the ability to access your money now. So download EarnIn today. That's E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type Torre Show under podcast when you sign up, and it'll really help us. Torre Show under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First. Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
I'm Danielle Moody.
I'm Toure.
Be sure to check out Democracy-ish, where we channeled the frustration, rage, and absurdity that was the 2020 election, as well as discuss the current state of the political climate and our country from a Black perspective.
New episodes available every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you stream your podcasts. I may jump back for a second, because the first name that you said in terms of influences was Kurt Cobain. And I loved Nirvana. He was a very powerful communicator, but he was just barely singing.
It's funny when you listen back to Nirvana, it's so much more melodic than you remember it being. Cause I guess at the time it was so radical, because it was like pared down melodies and really repetitive and rhythmical. But now when I listen to it, I think actually that's quite melodic, especially compared to, say, I don't know, like a trap vocal, which might be even more horizontal and all about the rhythm, and might be just moving between, you know, like the music that, say, I would say Rihanna brought into popular culture, where it's like it's a lot about the rhythm and about a kind of horizontal melody. You know, if you compare like Nirvana to that, it sounds like nursery rhymes or something. It really is. It's really, it's very melodic and up and down. And, you know, so I listened to it recently. I was like, wow, this is pop music, actually, you know. And it was, I mean, it was just like, it was everywhere.
He's so low and so low sort of energy, low tonally, and really, I mean, barely a singer, and you're a real singer. And I wonder, like, what you take from his influence when I'm like, what you're doing seems to me like a planet away from what he was doing.
Oh, that's really kind. Well, I guess, you know, I've got more into soulful vocals as I've got older and being more free and being more confident in my voice. You know, I worked in a jazz and soul club when I was at university. So I was doing English literature, and then I would walk from my lecture hall to this club called the Underground, which was maybe about a 10-minute walk. So I'd walk in my kind of thick built up kind of Spice Girls Skechers and my silver Bjork, you know, long skirt, and I would walk from university to this club, and it was really immersive experience of being around jazz, because it was meeting jazz musicians for the first time. So people who weren't bothered about getting the mortgage, getting the car, getting the high status job. It was like, you know, some of them had studied, some of them hadn't, but they were there and they just were living it, and they were doing like 3 gigs a day, and there was, you know, it was like the old days. So it's like people smoking in the dark room, and but that everyone's like 20 and you know, thinks they're going to live forever, and the people are discussing like politics and art, and someone's read this philosopher, and it was very, I really liked that scene, and I hadn't been around a sort of community like that, I guess, outside of church, which I'd, you know, grown up in. So it's like this bunch of people who really cared for each other and supported each other and believed in each other and were really committed to I guess, soul music and jazz and then like, you know, hip hop. And it even one of the nights was a salsa night. So there was that community as well. There's quite a lot of Brazilian people in Leeds as well. So, but that for me was just like a real awakening. And I remember I would get up and sing with those bands. So I wasn't playing my guitar. So I wasn't limited to kind of what I could do on the guitar. It was suddenly like, oh, what happens if I sing this Curtis Mayfield song? Or what happens if I sing this Bill Withers song or this Aretha Franklin song? Or, you know, they were so good. And it made me feel like I was on a sort of magic carpet or something. Like I sort of couldn't go wrong, that, you know, they were all a bit older than me. And that was an awakening as well. I was like, oh, I like singing other people's music. I like singing in this free way. And I like singing, I guess, where I don't have to go at the speed of the slowest member. So, I mean, all of us in our band, we were all just like, just getting by on our instruments. And that was the thing. It was like punk, more of a punk band. Whereas this was like, ooh, when you play with people who are miles better than you, it turns your thing into something else. So that was a revelation.
Let's talk about some of the singers you love, but let's talk about, are there songs that you, other people's songs that you loved that were like, for me as a singer, like, this is the song?
I mean, I guess at that time I would have sang like sort of any Stevie Wonder song was just like a map of how to tell a story and all his sort of turns and phrases and where he sort of pulled back. And I guess we used to sing like even like My Sherry Amour, just used to be like, oh, this just is so romantic and beautiful. But, you know, I guess at the time I was falling in love with a person who played the saxophone at the same club. So I would get up and play, and then like he would be there and I'd be there and I liked your thing. Oh, I like your thing. And it was like every time I went to sing, like he would be there and I'd be thinking like, I wonder if he is into this, or I wonder if he's getting like the secret message of this massively obvious love song, you know, that I'm doing, or whatever it would be, you know? So I think, yeah, I chose a lot of things, which is like, you know, you can't see the way I feel, but here it is. But yeah, I mean, I fell in love with Bill Withers. Love Bill Withers, sort of paired back, sort of honest, you know, storytelling. I mean, I absolutely love Bill Withers still. And, you know, on a daily basis, just like reflect on his songwriting and the simplicity of it and the truth of it, you know, and write something like, I can't write left-handed. Or Ain't No Sunshine, or Grandma's Hands, or they're amazing stories.
Grandma's Hands is such an amazing story, you know, because so many songs are about loving somebody who's abstract, right? Like, I love you, you're amazing, you're the perfect person. But like Grandma's Hands, it just tells the story, and it's familial love, not romantic love.
Yeah,
it's like a poem.
Absolutely. And to focus on a part of the body of a person as well. It's not like Grandma's Smile. It's sort of like the actions of this person are the things that made me love them. It's incredible. And again, that sort of he's so earthy and he's so real. And I don't know, you feel like if you're in the room with him, it would just be able to sort of look into your soul, you know. So when I think of Bill Withers, I think it's like a thing of stripping off, like when you're writing songs, it's like you're stripping off phoniness and you just got to pare it down to what's real. You know, I've seen interviews with him where he's like, he's getting offered record contracts, but he's like, well, I've got a really good job fixing these toilets on these aeroplanes. You know, he sort of doesn't need he's not into it for the showbiz, you know, he's Steve, a really remarkable writer.
Stevie Wonder has done it so many times, and I can barely think of just one, but As comes to mind as just one of his towering achievements. And it builds to this crescendo, right? Like it starts like kind of small and then it builds. He's like screaming his love from the mountaintops.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like,
yeah.
you know, it's just a story. It's an amazing story.
And to me, Stevie Wonder has that thing where it's like he has total freedom. And I, you know, I'm a fan of like his historic work, but also just being at the school of Stevie Wonder, which is like going to a show now that he does, where you're just like, how is he still doing this? But, you know, hearing him, like he's just leaping all over the place. You feel like there's nothing he can't do with his voice. But he also has this absolute freedom when he's on stage, where it's like he'll just hop around his career. The band needs to know everything because he might just decide to do something that he hasn't done for, you know, 5 years or whatever, 10 years. But also he can sometimes, like sometimes he might forget a word or a line and he'll laugh and he'll, you know, like style it out. Like he's just, he's so sort of bold. Like he can't make a mistake. Everything he does is just really beautiful.
That's not uncommon, right? For like a professional singer to like forget part of the verse.
Yeah.
And kind of, right, be on stage, you kind of like just... La 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 la, and like, yeah. right? Like you've
but
done
also,
that, right?
I mean, Stevie must have this amazing memory because if you think, I've been to lots of big shows where basically people definitely have like an auto cue with the words of their own songs because they're doing like 50 years of music and you think, fair enough. But obviously Stevie just has it all in his head. He's not reading the melodies and the words.
Maybe like you.
Have I done that before? You know, I haven't really done it with my own songs, but I feel like I've done it on like major like TV things, like say it's the Grammys, but it's an edit of your own song. So it's a, you miss out the second verse and you flip to this. Da, da, da. And I always just feel like I call it an American thing. It's like Americans, that they just make me feel like really unprofessional because I'll be doing stuff with like people and they're just like, oh yeah, you drop this and then this and then it's got three stabs and we do the chord check, the key change and then, and I'm always in the rehearsal like, oh, I'm not going to be able to remember this. And so many times I've got that sickening thing where it's like, you know, the orchestra has gone on to the next section. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we were meant to miss out that verse. So I've had loads of things like that. Or like times when I've fluffed lines of other people's songs. I've, you know, I've learned especially because it's a performance in front of like, I don't know, Quincy Jones or, you know, and you just... other people don't tend to notice, but I come off stage like, oh, well, that's the end of my life. You know, why did, that was my chance. You know, why did I do that? And it's so, yeah, it's really hard when the things like that go wrong. But I've had the opposite where I sang Baby Baby, you know, that Smokey Robinson song, but it was like at a Smokey Robinson tribute to him where he was there and in Washington, D.C. And I knew he was there and it's like, I felt like it just happened, you know, and then afterwards he was like, oh, you sang the shit out of that song. And I was like, that was Smokey Robinson. Like, I just remember that forever. Like, that's all the praise I need, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It was Smokey Robinson.
Tell me about writing a song. How do you write a song?
How do I write a song? Most of the time when I write songs, well, I guess until recently, most of the time I've written songs, I'll have my guitar and I'll just be finding shapes, playing chords. And when I hit on some, and I'll be singing out at the same time. And sometimes one line will come out and I'll think, oh, I really like that. You know, I haven't planned it ahead. So it's like, it'll happen that I'll hit a certain chord and I'll sing a certain line with some words and a melody. And then I think, right, that's my fragment or whatever, like that's my sort of golden piece. And then I'll just keep going and keep going. And then I might get like a little chain of those. And when I've got something that I feel is, it might be just like a bit of a verse or a bit of a chorus or a bit of a bridge. And then it's a case of trying other things to see if it fits or, you know, I have had things before, especially more harmonically simple things. There's something in my last record called a song called Walk On where it did all just come out in one go because it's just literally I'm playing two chords on the piano. I don't play the piano, so it's like I'm just plonking my hands and remembering plonk it there and then put it here. But this thing's coming out more like a sort of stream of consciousness, and that's how I tend to write, just kind of letting things flood out. I guess there's other situations where I write with people, and, you know, sometimes that's successful if I can feel comfortable and confident. And then there's other times where it's like the thing in me that comes out just kind of hides away, you know, and then it makes it difficult, you know, when it's like that. Yeah. And then more recently I've been writing this record where I'm sort of responding to these objects. So, and I didn't set out to do it, but I just saw, I was in this art space and I saw something. And then when I left, I realized that I was thinking about this thing was a pot, you know, so I was just thinking about this pot, you know.
Are you always open, or is it like, okay, now I'm getting into album mode, now I need to be like open to the universe and to inspiration?
I feel like I'm always open to it. I mean, if I'm on a really full-on tour where it's just like, gotta eat, gotta sleep, gotta get on this plane, I'm less likely to be in the mode of like,
yeah,
I'm looking at leaves. But then sometimes even when you're, you know, a good long plane journey will do it, you know, where, especially before you had wife on planes or whatever, it's just like, I'm tired, I've had a little sleep, I've had some food, and now my brain's just, you know, 10 more hours to go. I feel like your imagination just helps to entertain you. So sometimes I've got so many like voice notes of like, you know, just like singing little like things that when I go back to them, they don't make any sense. But at the time on the way to Japan, like 7 hours into the flight, I just have to get it down. It's like mostly background noise, but then something in there, like some melody that I'm like, yeah, I need to do something with this.
But so, you're in album mode now, right?
Yes, I'm in album mode now. I mean, I'm quite far into this record that I'm writing. I guess I'm closer to finishing it, I guess.
Wow. But, how many songs are done?
It always takes me a long time to make records because I write them and because I'm producing as well. And it's always a bit of a sore point, I guess, with people that I work with, but I really like making music. To me, that's a massive fun part of it. Like, you've written the song, but you think, well, is this bit going to be strings, or is this bit going to be synths, or is this bit going to be a choir, or is this bit going to be just me and we're dropping out the drums, or is it going to be this amazing drum I know, or are we going to program it, or are we going to have horns, or is it going to be guitar takes, and then how many guitar takes are we going to do, and then is it going to be crazy delays, or how are we going to make, is it going to be a stark, or is it going to be like weird reverb world? Like, all of those questions to me are fascinating and fun, and I like to play and I like to get it wrong. And, you know, I've definitely made stuff where I feel like I haven't got it right, you know, and maybe someone else would have done a better job of producing it. But at the same time, that to me that's so much of the fun of it. And I have tried it the other way around. And, you know, especially being on a labor, it's like, this person is, you know, it's like that Zoolander thing where it's like, this person is so hot right now. You know, if you work with X, everything's going to be, you know, so, and frequently I feel bad for that person, but whoever X is busy. The person whoever is X at that time is so busy that even if they just loved you and they were like, I really want to produce your record. You know, I've been in situations with people like who are literally like the hottest thing on the planet. It's like, right, let's write a song together. And okay, so they're in the studio. They may or may not be several hours late. And then when you get there, it's like, right, let's work on this. And then like maybe 45 minutes into it, they're like, okay, when you get some ideas, you tell Jeff, okay? Jeff's going to record them. And then I'm going to be down the hall because I've got another artist in this studio, and I'm going to be working with them. But then when you get your thing, and you're just like, the thing that's in me that can create just hides away at that moment. It's not even like, I feel offended. I just feel like, I just don't know how to do it like that. You know, I just don't know how to do it like that. So I have had a few run-ins with people who are just like in the white heat of success, and trying to mesh with them is so hard and just, you know, it just always seems to go wrong for me. So, you know, like there's been plenty of years where I thought like I'm the only person who didn't have a hit with X because we tried it out and it just didn't work.
Can you tell me how many songs are done for the new record? And is there a general tone or inspiration to this one that we can characterize?
Well, this record, weirdly enough, like when I first started doing it, because it's responding to these objects, they say, I'm not going to say loads about it because I just want to, when I talk about it, I want it to be the right thing. But I want to say, when I first started working on this project, I was like, oh, it's just going to be a few songs because, you know, I'm not going to become obsessed with this place. But then I was on tour at the time and I'd been in this particular building and I just became obsessed with all the things that I saw. And then when I arranged this visit back, I ended up staying for 2 weeks working in this archive. And it was just like one thing led to another. This photograph led to something else. And then I interviewed that person. And then I went to this place. And I went to this exhibition and this exhibition. And it was just, it just became an obsession of mine. So this record is like a double album. So it's like, I don't know, more than 20 songs. And I'm writing songs for them all the time. I'm writing songs for it all the time. We've just got this plate reverb, which is like a huge, it's like a huge metal plate inside a wooden box, and they just installed it in our studio. And as they were putting it in, I was like, okay, I've just finished another piece to this song that I've been writing for years. It's actually a song about Nina Simone. And I had the title for ages in my head. And then when I saw this, I kind of imagined the sound of it, that they make the reverb by sending the signal onto this metal plate, and it sort of wobbles and just creates this really sort of gorgeous, lush, reverberant sound. And so when I saw that piece of equipment, I thought, right. And then I started finishing the song, and I guess it's not far off, but we are doing this huge studio reinstallment, which is keeping me out of the studio. But I think my frustration is helping to just get me to finish all the bits, you know. But yeah, and also not getting to tour is it's agony, but at the same time, the feeling, the juice that I would sort of get out of it, it's like I have to put it into something else. So it's like I've got all these different projects on the go, but I definitely want this record to come out this year. So I'm just trying to get that done.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon, a mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time. of the Century and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
That was great. For more from me and Corinne, join us over at patreon.com/Toray Show. There's a whole another half hour of awesome conversation over there. When you subscribe for just $5 a month, you get the full episodes that we do on Wednesdays and our Friday Patreon exclusives. That's patreon.com/Toray Show. Thanks so much to Corinne for a great interview. This was really awesome and quite an honor and a pleasure. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel, Sam Montes, Jason Reynolds, Gerville Calais, Michelle Brenda Cox, Kathy F., Keena Murphy, and Earl Dorsey. Toray Show gives you fuel to power your dreams because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality. And this show can help. You can find me on Twitter at Toray and on Instagram at Toray Show. And of course on Patreon at patreon.com/Toray Show. Toray Show is written by me, Toray, and produced by Jackie Garifano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhull. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shanta Covington. Our booker is Claudia Jean. And we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests. Because the man can't shut us down.